Welcome to Sexy Mom Abundant Life with best-selling author and coach Kathy Williams, a show to help you tap into the support of the universe and access the abundance that's available in every area of your life. Listen in for conversations and tools to create more ease, joy, and possibility with family, relationships, business, and living. Kathy's joyful perspective will help you tap into your own wisdom and create a life of presence and abundance your way. Listen live on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, or anytime on iTunes or at IOM FM.
Welcome, everyone, to Sexy Mom Abundant Life. This is Kathy Williams, and today do I have a treat for you. I'm interviewing, we're going to have a fun conversation, Andrea Isabel Lucas. And I first heard Andrea in a conversation with Ash Amber J, the owner of the Middle Finger Project. And if you are an entrepreneur or have a small business or looking to start a small business, the Middle Finger Project is amazing. And so just go over to themiddlefingerproject.com, and Ash is crazy fun with lots of business ideas. So anyway, I saw Andrea on there, and her story inspired me so much, from going from a dumpster sleeping runaway at age 14 to the owner of Bar and Soul in the Northeast, a chain of bar places. What do you call it? Like workout centers that also nourish your soul, not just your body. And I think, what an inspiring idea. But the story that you told and the mission you have, Andrea, is amazing. And now Andrea has a book as well. And so we'll discuss the book. It's wonderful. It's got all these different chapters about not only owning your time and your goals, but also your style. And the book is called Own It All: How to Stop Waiting for Change and Start Creating It, because your life belongs to you. Welcome to the show, Andrea. I'm so delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the fantastic intro.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, it's true. Your story and your grit inspired me so much, because I know a lot of people, like, you became a mom when you were a teenager. Is that true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was 19. My son is now 19.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of people, even as I look at, like, the mothers I know and the entrepreneurs, like, a lot of women use children as an excuse as to why I can't create what I'd like to create. Mm-hmm. And clearly, yeah, you didn't do that. And I was looking, as I was reading your story, which is amazing. Like, I've been reading the book, and it's just like, she did all this and she has two children, right?
Yes.
So I would love for you. Oh, say that again.
I also have a 12-year-old daughter, yes.
Okay. So would you tell your story a little bit from going from this home in which you didn't feel safe? You actually felt safer sleeping in dumpsters than at home. And the story of up to the pivotal moment where you were like, no one is going to, like, save me. Nobody is going to come in and say, Andrea, you can choose something different. I would just love for the audience to hear, like, this was a story of intensity. Your life wasn't that smooth and easy, and nothing was really handed to you.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to. And I'll say, I love how bold and blunt you are to say that moms do use their kids as an excuse, because we could argue that it's a great excuse to not be able to do things. And like, to be honest, when I'm not doing something I want to do, my kids are still my favorite excuse for why I'm not doing it. So, you know, definitely no finger pointing at all. Like, I've been there. It is challenging. It can be challenging being a mom and you can still do what's important to you. I'd love to share some about my story. You know, I grew up in southern Maine, actually, and my mom was mentally ill. She had issues that had her in and out of the hospital. We had a relationship in the sense that, you know, she's very kind and loving and nurturing, but not as equipped to necessarily, you know, be raising kids. My dad was abusive. I mean, he was mostly like verbally and emotionally abusive and controlling, but sometimes he was also physically abusive. And I was the youngest. My brothers were already kind of out of the house because I was 10 and 12 years younger than them. So when I was, in high school, around, you know, somewhere between 12 and 14 years of age, like I really started to rebel and just to want to be out of that house. And at one point when I was 14, I was so afraid to go home one day. I felt so unsafe that I just didn't go home. And then every day that I didn't go home, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be in so much trouble. So I kept not going home. And I ended up living kind of on the streets for a few months. I was sleeping in the clothing donation, those like Salvation Army dumpsters. I was really staying at strangers' houses. It was unsafe, and yet I felt safer than I did at home. You know, I kind of rallied at one point in high school and really just pulled myself up by my bootstraps, started getting really good grades and just taking an interest in my future, especially like once I was old enough to get my license and I could kind of move about a little more freely. And then while I was taking a year off before starting college, I ended up getting pregnant with my son, and that started, you know, a long journey of, it took me about 10 years to get my college degree, which I eventually did. And, you know, I supported myself working as a stripper. It was great money. I could make anywhere from, when I started, you know, $250, $300 to, by the time I was done, it usually at least $800 a night. I would work about, say, 6 nights a month, like 3 long weekends. And then I was at home raising my son. I had my own condo. I was taking college classes part-time. I was about 23, and I met this person that kind of swept me off my feet, and I thought, oh good, here's someone who's going to take care of me. And they were very financially you know, endowed, so I was able to walk away from the strip club life, which I was more than ready to do. And I thought that was going to be it. I knew actually that I was settling, and it really only looked good on paper, but that was the direction I took at the time, and it did not turn out well. It ended up being an abusive relationship. I don't think I knew actually that I was in a full-blown abusive relationship because of kind of the brainwashing that happens when you're in that sort of a relationship. You don't realize the undermining and the abusive and controlling behaviors, and I think especially with my background, I was prepared to tolerate a lot more than I should have. And really, started out as an argument one night turned into me ending up at the emergency room. And I was literally having my face x-rayed. I had to run to my neighbor's house to escape, and they drove me to the hospital. I was having my face and skull x-rayed to make sure nothing was broken. And, you know, I called home to tell my parents about what had happened. And my father, who I've since really and truly forgiven and actually feel like a deep sense of compassion for. But, you know, with the resources that he had at the time and from his perspective at the time, his response when I told him what had happened was, what are you going to do? You can't leave. Thinking like actually staying in that relationship was better than anything I had to kind of go back to. And that was that wake up moment that you referenced, Kathy. That was really the moment that I realized, oh my God, like, I am on my own here. Like, I can keep kind of letting myself be tossed about, literally and figuratively, or I can take responsibility for what's going to happen. I don't have anybody who's coming to clean this up. Nobody's going to get me out of this mess. There's no white knight. There's no savior coming, you know, and I think I had thought that partner would kind of be that white knight. And in that moment, I just realized, like, if I'm going to be okay, if I'm going to make it, it's really up to me. I've got to take 100% responsibility for what happens from here on out. And that began really the process of me rebuilding my life. I ended up discovering Bar Fitness, which is based on a method that Lottie Burke, a former dancer, had created decades ago, and that had kind of a cult following. Even when I discovered it, it was not mainstream yet. And I taught it for a few years before it ever went mainstream. And gosh, I'm trying to give you the summarized version as best I can. But
no, that's so fun, because I did the Lottie Burke method. I found it maybe on Netflix or something like that. And I just ate up all this bar stuff from Netflix when I was like in my early 20s. Yeah, and it was.
That's so cool. You were an early adopter, as was I. Like, I found it, I read about it in like a Jane magazine article in like 2005, and I found the DVDs, and then I ended up finding a studio, a small tiny little boutique studio that had opened up near my home, and I was taking classes from her and ended up training with her, thinking, oh, this will be a part-time job, like I'll make some extra money on the side. I love doing this. Definitely didn't think it would be my career. And as, you know, life went on and time went on, and I really began to take more and more ownership over my life, I started to see that, well, for one thing, what I was truly passionate about was empowering women. And, you know, as I mentioned, it took me a good 10 years, you know, to get my college degree. So along the way, I changed majors a few times, and I thought I was an English major because I loved books, and I loved talking about books. And when I discovered that women's studies was a thing, that's when I realized, like, oh, you know what? I don't want to be an English major. I hated picking apart literature and criticizing it. It was all about criticizing great literature. And it put so much pressure to write great literature. It didn't even make me want to write, because all I could do was criticize. You know, my inner critic was, like, so finely tuned. But what I did love was discussing the gender politics in any given story or piece of writing, and really taking a feminist critique and breaking apart all that was happening in the world of women's empowerment. And so when I found out you could major in just that, I was like, oh my God, sign me up for that. So as a women's studies major, I thought, I'm going to be a college professor. Like, I always felt that I had really great potential. Kind of to circle back to your question about, you know, or your point about not using kids as an excuse, I think that I had my son when I was so young, it didn't even occur to me that he was an excuse. Like, I was too naive to realize how big of a sort of statistical disadvantage I was at in terms of my success. And luckily, I was naive enough to think that I could still do everything I had intended to do. And so, you know, I just acted as though I was going to be successful. And I kept on. And as I said, I mean, it wasn't very sexy taking 10 years to finish school. It was, you know, oh, there's one 3-credit class here, and there's one, you know, 4-credit class here. But I got there and luckily really found my passion. So I thought, oh my God, I have to be a professor because I have to write books. I want to be a part of the conversation. I want to be contributing to, you know, the dialogue around women's empowerment. And I want to reach as many women as possible and help them have the kind of epiphany that I had about taking ownership of their lives without them having to hit rock bottom like I did. Like, I've got to really get on my soapbox. And it was actually while I was taking a bar class one day, this kind of side job that I did for fun, that I had an epiphany, and I can still see the room that I was in. You know, I can still, like, be in that moment again and remember the feeling as it kind of hit me, like, wait a minute, what if this was my career? Like, what if I had a studio? Because every time I get up to speak as a bar teacher, I have the attention of 20 women. It's like the same, you know, same thing I wanted to have as a college professor. Like, what if I don't need to jump through all those hoops to get there? What if I could use this platform to spread the message that I want to spread? And that's really, that lit the fire in my belly. And from there on out, I became a teacher. I became a studio manager. I quit being a studio manager, which was terrifying, and went back to just being a teacher so I could begin to build my own brand and my own business. And I absolutely had $0 to start. I mean, I would say at the time I started my business, I had never had more than maybe $2,000 to $4,000 in a savings account at any point in my life. And you know, I had probably a couple $1,000s saved when I started, and I spent like $500 on my LLC, and or maybe even $1,000, maybe $500 on like a graphic designer and getting my website started. But I began by using space at somebody else's studio and teaching all the classes myself. There's really no overhead. And then I was able to train and hire a few more teachers and build from there. And then I thought, well, I'll never be able to have a commercial lease of my own. Like, I'm not some trust fund, you know, baby, which is what I thought all entrepreneurs had to be. And when I approached another studio about having a program out of her space, she was like, you know, I am moving. I will sell you my studio and I'll finance it to you. And I ended up getting an insane deal and taking that leap. And from there, gosh, I went from having one studio to five studios within 3 years.
Wow. Wow. So let's go back to this moment of epiphany. I just love that because you had the desire. You already had the desire to write books and reach women and spread this message and inspire and empower. And you thought it had to come one way, right? And I think a lot of us do this, like, oh, well, this is the way. I've seen people do it. And then you come up with something that nobody's ever created before in the exactly the same way. So, we're already at the break. So we'll be back in just a few minutes, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Sexy Mom Abundant Life. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
Feed your soul with waves of consciousness on Om Times Radio. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Dr. Kevin here, and I want to invite you every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, to join me on the Dr. Kevin Show, where we have a diversity of guests who help you step outside the box, behind the curtain, and see what a load of crap is going on in the world today, so you have more information with which to make better decisions. We'll see you there. Namaste.
Would you like to have a life of more clarity and abundance? What's possible for you when you get out of your own way? Connect with Kathy Williams for private coaching or join her online to transform your relationship with abundance in every area of your life with the Radical Abundance Course. Kathy also travels, facilitating radical abundance and access consciousness bars and foundation around the world. She'll be in London, Hawaii, Hilton Head, and other fun locations soon. Visit www.meetkathywilliams.com for a class schedule to connect with Kathy or invite her to your region and get some free goodies.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look. Flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sexy Mom Abundant Life, everyone. This is Kathy Williams, and I'm having a conversation with Andrea Isabel Lucas. She's the author of Own It All, How to Stop Waiting for Change and Start Creating It, because your life belongs to you, which I love. I love that, you know, you discussed a little bit earlier, Andrea, that you were kind of waiting for someone to come along and save you. And I recognized throughout my young life too, especially as a teen, I was looking for the person who would make my life work, right? The connector or the person who would help me get the job that I really wanted. And I was a young dancer, and I thought you had to have that person, not recognizing, hey, that person who really creates your life is you. maybe that's like the one missing thing in school that would be the most useful thing. Like, hey, everybody, yeah. If you're looking
personal
for the
responsibility.
One. Exactly. We know about algebra and we know about all these things we never use, like early American history, but we don't actually, we aren't actually taught that, like, hey, no one's going to save your ass.
Right.
So, we were at you had told the story of coming from, you know, being a runaway to having this epiphany of wow, I can do everything that I really want to do, like empower women and spread this message of empowerment and inspiration in bar classes, like at doing what I'm already doing. And I love that because, like I mentioned just before break, a lot of times we think that, oh, this is the direction my life is going to take. I've seen people do this a certain way, like teach this through college. And instead, you came up with something essentially you hadn't seen before. I remember you writing that you had seen yoga teachers empowering and spreading the message of creating your life and coming to inner peace. But you hadn't seen that really in an exercise environment or in the bar environment. Yeah. So would you say a little bit about creating that and doing something different that you hadn't really seen people doing before?
Well, yeah, I did feel really jealous of the yoga teachers because everybody acted like they were so wise and they really had something to say. And I hated being thought of as just a fitness instructor. You know, that was my interpretation. Oh, people think I'm just a fitness instructor. Nobody thinks that I have wisdom. What makes this yoga teacher who's just because they've been through, you know, this training, now they're like granted the given the mic, so to speak. And I just thought, well, so first what I did actually was I went and got certified to be a yoga teacher. I started teaching yoga and that was great. But I actually really missed the workout that I loved in bar. And I was like, well, why can't we have it both ways? Like, I want both. I don't want one or the other. And it's funny, there's a tiny little book you might have read before called Steal Like an Artist, which is just about the way that we all have this multitude of influences and nobody has the same influences that you have. So when you take a little of this and a little of that and you put them together, you do create a unique self-expression, even if you don't feel like you've gone out and like reinvented the wheel and made something so brand new, like it's still fresh. It's still a fresh take that only you have, you know? And so I think given my background, I mean, it was just like a perfect storm of what there was for me to create. There was my background of being a domestic violence survivor, like pulling myself up from, you know, the depths of that. There was the love that I had for bar. There was even like my background as a stripper probably played into it to some degree. There was my women's studies degree. There was my yoga training. And I just kind of put it all together and created the class that I would really want to go take. And I hoped that others would want to as well. And they did.
You know what? I love that you mentioned like all of these different elements, because I think, you know, for anyone listening, like your background, your unique knowledge has set you up to create whatever it is you'd like to create, even if it doesn't feel like it, right? Like we have these low moments and those moments can actually be used as an inspiration for others. Or you think like, well, I made some crappy choices and yeah, well, so has everyone else in life. So it's like, what if you could use those to really create what it is you'd like, as Andrea has here?
It really gives you some cred, too. Like, I have trouble with people trying to share wisdom about really deep issues that they haven't been through. You know what I mean? I feel like everyone has their own unique set of experiences or struggles, and those are really the things that you're perfectly set up to share about authentically.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just really curious, like, early on, you had some people who were unsupportive. You talked about, like, when you were beaten, your dad was like, well, you can't leave that, right? And so I'm just curious as to, like, this is what was, and tell me if I'm wrong, but this is, it sounds like that's what was kind of normal for you, to have people who were not that supportive. Or seemed supportive, but then would beat you. And so I'm curious about the shift from, like, going from that to people who had your back. And like you mentioned in the book, your boyfriend, when you finally got your own space, he actually had to have knee surgery. And a woman stepped in and she was like, I'll totally help you create this space and decorate the space and do all the things that he was going to do. So I'm just curious about that, like going from people who aren't that supportive to the process of like shifting your life and creating and choosing a different kind of relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I had to, I did a lot of work on, and I'm still working on really being able to trust people. I mean, let's be honest. I'll be working on that probably for a while. And it's like you don't have to wait until you're all better to get going. You know, you do start from wherever you are, and you create and you build and you take baby steps. And it doesn't look sexy at first. And a lot of times it just looks like not much. And everything kind of adds up. So I think that, you know, even in the midst of all that I was going through, there were some wonderful people that came into my life, and thank God for them, you know, and I am still working on being discerning about when a relationship is like still bringing more positivity into my life than difficulty, right? Like I still have times, for example, like when maybe there's a contractor or like a vendor that I've hired or a consultant that I've hired and that I'm working with. And in the beginning, it's like, oh my God, I'm loving this, all this great advice. I really trust them. And then there comes a point where it's like, you know what? This isn't a fit anymore. It's not serving me. It's not like sending me in the right direction. And then having to end those relationships gracefully. It's the number one hardest thing. But one of the things that has helped me more than anything with my relationships with myself and with others has been a bunch of courses that I have done through a company called Landmark Worldwide. And when I was a Lululemon ambassador, they were big about sending all their staff to Landmark courses. And they sent me as an ambassador to the Landmark Forum. And it was there, about 5 years after the domestic violence had happened, that I surprisingly ended up finally forgiving and like putting that in the past. And actually just learning how to forgive taught me how to forgive. And it taught me the power of taking that energy back, stopping making the other person wrong and fighting for your story about how you were the victim. And just realizing that as long as you are pouring your energy into fighting for that story that I was the victim, you are not free to use that energy for anything else. And when you're the victim, which, you know, I have more to say about that, but when you're the victim, when you are standing in the shoes of the victim, feeling like the victim, you feel very much at the mercy of your circumstances. When you start to just choose to be responsible for whatever the hell is going to happen from here on out, and you can't even choose to be responsible for what did happen. I'm not saying you have to. It helps, actually. All of a sudden, you're in the driver's seat. You've got all the power. You're not waiting around to see what's going to happen to me next. It's like, what am I going to do next?
Yes. I love that. Yeah. And as we're looking at this idea of being the victim, it's not only if we're a domestic violence survivor, it's also like the victim of money stories, the victim of oh, my kids, right? The victim of this accident happened to me. Like,
oh,
the victim of anything. Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I love that idea of taking back your energy from that any victim story. And was there something from that training that you could share that made the most impact to you, or an aha that you had?
Biggest aha that I had was, we had a homework assignment about forgiving somebody. There was a lot of calling up people that you're estranged from and, you know, taking responsibility for your part in whatever happened to cause the rift, or even just taking responsibility for, you know, just being unwilling to forgive or let go or things like that. Just, it's incredibly empowering. I sat there with my arms crossed and I was like, this is unfeminist. This is crap. I was abused. And that's what I wanted to say about the point of victim. I wrote an article for XO Jane a couple of years ago about stop calling people toxic and just get out of this victim mentality because it's disempowering you. And people were so pissed in the comments section, and they were just like, you're blaming the victim, kind of, or suggesting that victims don't identify as victims. It could be really disempowering. And I did have to stop and take a step back and think. Someone said in the comments, like, I work in mental health. Giving people in abusive relationships a label like victim allows them to put themselves in a box of, like, this is not okay, and I need to get out. So there is value in that victim identity in that sense. So I had to kind of pause and reflect and realize, like, look, I'm kind of on my, like, ivory tower over here, years removed from being in this terrible situation, telling everybody to stop acting like a victim. And maybe there is a place for that thinking when you are like, okay, damn it, this is not okay, and I deserve better than this. So, like,
right,
I will,
like,
say,
when you're in it.
For it. Exactly. There is a place for it. And when you're not in it, when you want to move on, like, that is, for me, that's what it took was, so anyway, I wasn't there to get forgiveness that weekend. I was not interested. I wasn't looking for it. And I was there to get leadership skills and, I don't know, better communication skills and just be more successful in my career. And I, you know, was all, you know, indignant or self-righteous. And I went up to the leader on the break and I was like, look, I didn't do this homework about calling somebody and forgiving them because, like, I have a restraining order against the person. And then he was like, well, you could write a letter that you don't have to send. And I was like, there's nothing for me to apologize for. Like, I was abused, period. And he was just like, okay, so that's totally fine if it's working for you. And if you want to keep getting exactly what you're getting, you can just keep doing what you're doing. And if you want, you could entertain the possibility, what would it be if you got to stop proving that he was wrong and that you were right? And I did not even know I was doing it until that moment. And I it was such an aha moment. I was like, oh my God, I am still doing that. And who the hell cares at this point? Like, I've moved on with my life. Why the hell would I waste my precious energy trying to make sure everybody knew he was the bad guy and I was the good guy? Like, what? So not what I wanted to be spending my precious life on. And that really was what opened it up. And then he gave me some strategies. And one of the ones that was most helpful was just, like, ask yourself, what causes a person to kind of grow up to be the kind of person that abuses others? Generally, it's stemming from some pain or suffering or abuse or neglect that they suffered at some point in their life. And I really took that on board, and especially with regards to my dad, because he had a terrible childhood. I mean, if I think mine was bad, like, his was horrific at times. So that was so helpful for me, and just developing compassion and just being able to, yeah, just move on.
I love that. And as you were talking, you know, I thought of someone I still tell myself stories in my head. Like, to prove that person's wrong, you know, and I'm like,
right. Yeah. It's kind of like that thing, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Exactly, and it just takes so much, as you said, precious energy that could be directed in a totally new direction.
Absolutely.
So as I was reading your book, you know, I love that you have not only chapters on goals and relationships and things like that, but also on style, right? I think that especially as mothers and business, you know, one of those things that we don't even look at is like owning our own style sometimes. And I'm going to circle back to that. But first, I was reading your chapter on goals, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much here that I say to people and I do with people, and especially that idea of envy as something that you can use to grow your life. It's not a bad thing. So I would love for you to... Oh no! Is there a way that you used that have used that to expand your life? And so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I have. One way is just looking at, you know, people who have published books and are writing these like powerful, you know, self-help books, and were really, being teachers to thousands and thousands of people. And I felt like, oh my God, like they don't have half the life experience that I've had. Like that should be me. I should have a book deal. I should reach millions of people. Like I have so much that I want to say. Like why is she getting that and I'm not? And it's a little fun when you have that thought, but it definitely, you know, caused me to go, oh, okay, so I want to have a book and I want to reach tons and tons of people. So what did she do that I didn't do? Because guess what? Like she did the work and I hadn't yet, you know? And so I got going and I did the work.
And it's a beautiful product. You know, I mean, what you've created is amazing. So, when we get back, we can dive in a little bit deeper to possibly each of the chapters or just give a little overview of what you've created. And thank you so much for being here with me on Sexy Mom Abundant Life, Andrea. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Would you like to have a life of more clarity and abundance? What's possible for you when you get out of your own way? Connect with Kathy Williams for private coaching or join her online to transform your relationship with abundance in every area of your life with the Radical Abundance Course. Kathy also travels, facilitating Radical Abundance and Access Consciousness Bars and Foundation around the world. She'll be in London, Hawaii, Hilton Head, and other fun locations soon. Visit www.meetkathywilliams.com for a class schedule, to connect with Kathy, or invite her to your region and get some free goodies.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sexy Mom Abundant Life, everyone. This is Kathy Williams, and today I'm having a conversation with Andrea Isabel Lucas. She's the author of the book Own It All, and she also has Bar and Soul, a really cool chain of bar studios, yoga studios in the Northeast. And you have a new online bar training, which sounds super cool. I'd love to hear about that.
Okay, yeah. So when I initially started teaching bar, I had the privilege of training with some of the people who had run the Lottie Burke Method in New York City for over 25 years. They were absolutely the most, I would say the foremost experts on bar on this continent. And after I had opened my own studios, it came to my attention that Lottie Burke's daughter, Esther Fairfax, was actually still teaching her mother's method in London. She was in her 80s, and that you could go and train and get certified with her. So,
wow.
Pilgrimage. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I went to England twice and studied with Esther, who's now, she'll be 85 next month, actually, and has been teaching her mother's method. They don't even use the word bar at all. It's, you know, the Lottie method, and or pure Lottie, she calls it. And so that was amazing to get to study with her, and just such a privilege. And the funny thing is that I think because we just call it bar here, because the name Lottie Burke is trademarked, people think they can just make up whatever they want using a ballet bar and even offer certifications. Some of them are as few as a couple of hours, which just makes me cringe because I have been trained for hundreds upon hundreds of hours in really a very specific methodology, which of course has evolved over the decades as everything does. But I really wanted to offer a training that taught all of the authentic roots and background and gives all of the necessary like anatomical knowledge, hands-on adjustments, all of the, what Esther would call the je ne sais quoi, which is like the way that you hold space in a room, what you do with your lighting, your music, how you interact with the people in your class to create an experience, which is what her mother was all about. The training is called Bar Guild Academy, and it is an online training with a very active online community. And if people are interested, you can find out more at barguild.com. It's BARREGUILD.com.
Thank you. And I love that you mentioned it's an experience. And it sounds like, you know, I haven't personally attended one of your classes, but it sounds like that's what you aim to create for people, an experience that not only nourishes and feeds their body, but also the human being on all levels.
100%. And thank God for the internet and podcasts and social media, because you and I wouldn't be chatting right now without it. And there's friends of mine, people I interviewed in my book, that are really just online friends that we've never met in real life because we live in even different countries. So I'm grateful for it. And at the same time, we need like our daily dose. Like we need that in-person connection and experience, being in the room with other human beings and just being in our bodies. It's a very powerful thing, and we need it probably now more than ever.
Absolutely. I see that it looks like people are more lonely now, research is saying, than sure. When we weren't so, quote, connected.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what? This question is really coming to mind as someone who has 5 different studios and online training now. You know, I'm sure you're training in person as well, and have written a book. I know that listeners are like, how does she do all that? And two kids, like, and a relationship. I don't know if you're in one now, but at least in the past, like, how do you do that with all your time? And I know this is a topic you have a chapter on, an amazing chapter, by the way. But could you tell listeners a little bit about, like, how you do all that?
I would say that, like, you know, that is the question that I get asked the most. And that is the question that I kept top of mind when I wrote the book. Like, when I sat down and outlined what all the chapters were about and what I was going to address, I really was just like, let me reach the woman wherever she's at, if she's at rock bottom, if she's feeling like she's in a good place, but she's kind of wanting to keep growing and evolving. Like, I wanted a book that anyone could relate to and that would answer essentially that question. Like, how the heck, because there's just nothing worse than, you know, when you get into that state of comparison and it looks like someone else is so successful and you'd feel like, why doesn't my life look like that? But it's always important to remember that, you know, those are kind of like the things you can put on your resume, like your business, your book, your, you know, 2.5 kids and a picket fence and all of that. Like, you know, there's the day to day of it. There's the nitty gritty of it. It's not always pretty. In other words, the book was really meant to answer that and just show you, like, I've really had to kind of claw my way through some really gross stuff to get to where I am now. But as far as time specifically, I think one of the biggest things that I have done that has helped me to manage, you know, the same number of hours in a day that everybody has is really building a team of support. I mean, the only way you can exponentially, you know, grow your time is to develop a team, basically. You can get more efficient, but you're still going to only have those same 24 hours. So, you know, the more you start to hire and train other people and get them on board, it's like cloning yourself or like multiplying yourself. So the biggest thing for me was just learning that sharing the credit, sharing the glory, letting other people really have their self-expression through my project was going to only make my mission and my project that much bigger and that much faster. So, you know, it's hard when you're a perfectionist and you think that everything has to be done a certain way. It's definitely a practice learning to delegate and learning to share your projects with other people and not having to do everything yourself and control that it's going to be done perfectly your way. But I would say that's, you know, if I'm trying to give the quickest answer, it's definitely getting other people who want to help and are genuinely excited about the same things as you to be on board.
I concur. And, you know, for me, it was a lot of like giving up that control, the control element of like, wait, but I have a vision, or wait, I can do this really well. And I think you even mentioned getting angry in the book when you were in a class and there was a project, you know, the instructor said, okay, come up with a project. And you had this amazing project in mind. And she said, okay, now give it to somebody else to do. And you're like, wait, nope.
it's my cool project. I want everyone to know I did this. But, you know, there's really just only so much that one person can accomplish. And that was it was a leadership course. And that was the whole point of the course was you want to lead, you are going to have to basically create leaders.
Wow. Yeah, it's so true. When we try to micromanage people, it just holds projects and holds creations way back, right, keeping them from being what they truly could be.
Yeah, then you become the bottleneck to your own, you know, potential, really.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So that giving things up allowed you to, or giving up control and perfectionism has allowed you to do all these things.
It's a practice for sure. Another thing that I recommend to people that want to really own their time is to use to do a time tracking study for like just 7 days. figure out where your time actually goes. I like the app. There's an app called A-Tracker. You really have to use the pro version. It's like a couple of bucks. The pro version just works so much better, and it's worth it. And then you can look back at a week and be like, okay, you know, 65 minutes a day driving my kids places, you know, 2 hours on social media, you know, oh, look, cooking only actually took me, you know, prepping my food for the week only took an hour. And then, like, think about how that freed me up for the week. So things like that, it's just so eye-opening.
That is so cool. I love that suggestion. And you also mentioned in the David Allen's Getting Things Done.
Yeah.
That's an amazing book.
Amazing. Yeah. And his system is like a hair more complicated than I need it to be. So I use like a little slightly pared down version of that, but I do really, really appreciate and use some of his methods.
Awesome. I mean, you reference so many fun things in the book, and I was explaining, I think we're re-recording this pre-record, and I was talking about the fact that, like, your book is like a workshop, because it really explores so many areas and takes you deep. Like, let's uncover this thing that's really going on here. You might think it's the surface level thing, but actually what's deeper than that? And that's one thing I love about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. So, would you just let everybody know again, the number to text where they can get a free chapter and some other little goodies?
Oh, I would love to. If you send a text to the number 66866 and just text the word Andrea, my first name, A-N-D-R-E-A. That is how you get the goodies from me, and we can keep in touch that way.
Awesome. And then you can be reached all over social media. You're on so many platforms, from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter and your own site. What's your favorite way for people to,
right
to find
now,
you?
I'd say at the moment it's Instagram. And I am at Andrea Isabel with two L's Lucas. And my business is Bar and Soul. And our handle is Bar, B-A-R-R-E, Soul, S-O-U-L.
Wonderful. And also, you're at barsoul.com. Can people also find the online training there? Or is it a totally different website for that online training, if they're curious?
The online training is at barguild.com. And my studios, if you're in the New England area, are barsoul.com. And my book is ownitallbook.com.
Beautiful. Pretty straightforward there. Everything is its name, essentially, .com. So, yeah, I like that. So what would you like to leave listeners with? I know that Your book is such a gift in terms of inviting people to take the next biggest risk they can take in any given area. What is there anything that we haven't touched on that you would really love to invite readers to or listeners to or leave them with?
I would love to close this out by talking for a minute about legacy, because that's where the book closes out. And I think that's the part we talked about earlier that got cut off before we had to re-record. So hopefully
awesome.
This isn't repetitive.
Okay.
But I'll keep it short.
I think you're correct.
Okay. You know, the book is really about going out there and getting what you want in your life. And having the life that you want, and not waiting for permission, and not waiting to be granted access or an invitation or any of those things. And in addition to the fact that you are 100% worthy and deserve to have all the things that you want for you, we all need something that really gives our life meaning. And that's why we close out the book by talking about legacy, because, like, after you've taken care of you, that frees you up to make your greatest contribution in this world. And so the thought I wanted to leave on legacy is just to say that, like, your legacy is yours for the choosing. I do not believe that it have to, you know, that you have to go on like a quest to find what it is, or that there's a right answer, or that you have to like look for a sign. Like, you know, I heard the activist Sean King speak once in Boston, and he gave us, the audience, the tip to just be bothered and to lean into that being bothered, because the things that, you know, keep you awake at night and that drive you crazy, whether that's the environment, whether it's animal rights, women's rights, for me, that's what, you know, empowering women gets me out of bed every day. I like fitness, but I really, really care about empowering women. It's what bothers me when women are not empowered. So I just want to invite the audience to have a look at what bothers you, because as Sean King said, like, your purpose and your mission in life can be found in what bothers you.
Wow. Using that as a catalyst to create something greater.
Absolutely.
And it's never too late, everyone. In the book, Andrea mentions, you know, Vera Wang starting to develop or design wedding dresses, what, in her 40s? Or yep. And some best-selling authors writing, you know, their first books in their 60s. You know, it's not too late to get started on whatever it is that's calling to you. So thank you for doing what was calling to you, Andrea.
Thank you so much for letting me share about it.
Millions of women are benefiting. So thank you. I appreciate having you here on the show. And yeah, check Andrea out at barsoul.com or the Bar Guild Academy. And I'm just super grateful for all of you. Thanks so much.
Have a great week, everybody. Aloha.